What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, November 1st. Oh, it's November 2017. Oh, I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Rogue One's Gary Whitta.
Hello!
Thank you for coming back, Gary.
Am I always going to be Rogue One? I have to come up with something new so I can be something.
Well, you've done a bunch of other stuff.
I mean, obviously, I'm not complaining, but.
Sure. You've done a bunch of stuff in your career,
but
obviously.
Rogue One would be considered the best note.
You're actually in the Roper Report today, which is interesting. I don't think we've ever had that.
Oh, I forgot I left my notes on your
desk.
We'll
get your own notes, all right?
Because is there like an FNG that can go get those for me?
No, well, Joey's just a nice woman.
A nice person.
Yeah, Joey's just going to do it. I don't think I have to be the FNG business of it.
How are you? FNG, if anything.
Are you? Yeah, well, that's the thing. Let's just nip this in the bud. 2 weeks ago, Gary Whitta comes on Kinda Funny Games Daily. He does a great job. The next day, Andy Cortez decides he hates his job, doesn't come into work. I have to call Gary Whitta back and say, hey, Gary Whitta.
He clearly saw me.
He's
and
like,
thought,
can't compete with that. I can't compete with that. So then we get two shows with Gary Whitta. Rogue One's Gary Whitta. Book of Eli's Gary Whitta. We get two shows back to back with him. Everybody on the subreddit, everybody in the forums, everybody in the YouTube comments. Gary Whitta's great. Gary Whitta's great. Hire Gary Whitta to reply.
Man, I don't go to those. Maybe I should start visiting.
No, you don't. You'll get a big head. Go hire him to replace Danny. Make Gary Whitta one of the Kind of Funny games.
So the public response was favorable.
They liked you, and they all started knocking on my door, knocking on my Twitter to get you to come in here permanently, to have you be a reoccurring person. Ladies and gentlemen, this man wrote Rogue One.
Co-wrote
Rogue One. He worked on The Walking Dead. He's going to work on The Walking Dead again. We'll get to that. He's got a Star Wars book out right now. He's writing Rebels episodes and all stuff. Gary Whitta does not have time to come in and do Kinda Funny Games Daily on a regular basis.
Oh, I have time.
You do?
I mean, it's what, an hour a week? It's my lunch, and it's a lunch. It's essentially my lunch hour.
Oh.
So it's a nice, part of the reason why I've enjoyed doing it, it's a nice way for me to get out of the house. I'm a homebody. My wife said, you got to get out of the house more. Please, God. Get out of the house more. And I said, well, you know, I've been doing the Kind of Funny thing. I don't know if it's like a regular gig, but like, I enjoy going in whenever. But no, you want me to come in like once a week or something?
You want to make it official? Do you want to come in once a week? You want to be an official Kind of Funny Games?
You want to say like every Wednesday I'll come in?
Widow Wednesdays?
Come in. Widow Wednesdays?
Like Widow Wednesdays?
This is why you are a media baron. This is why you are presided over this media empire.
I'm the Rockefeller of this thing.
You've taken Kind of Funny from a nickel and dime outfit to what, like at least like quarters and actual whole dollars at this point.
See, I like it. You it's been mere seconds of you being an employee of Kind of Funny. Look at you, you're already complimenting the boss, man.
That's
I like
right.
That
I know. I know how to climb up the ladder of success here. Is Brown knows the boss,
ladies and gentlemen.
So is this happening? Is this official? Is this happening live?
You tell me. Is it happening? You're officially a host now. We have to pay you, and you come in every Wednesday.
You're gonna pay me.
We're gonna pay you.
Oh my God, you could have got away with not paying me.
Damn,
we'll talk about that after the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gary Whitta is your new Kinda Funny Games Daily show host. Widow Wednesdays. Until inevitably
unless something more important comes along, and then I'll do something else.
Sure, exactly.
But we'll say, okay, yeah, let's do it. Widow Wednesdays, begin now.
That's the beauty of Kinda Funny Games Daily, is that we have a good stable of hosts so people can move around.
What I also like about it is like how nimble you are. Like, you just made a major business decision, just like, boom.
That's what I do.
Extemporaneously,
I mean?
Just on the air, like it's just done.
Well, you see, we have a big contingent of European fans over there.
You do?
So they were really stoked when we had Danny O'Dwyer here with his lovable Irish brogue. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then when we lost him and started going too American,
some more cosmopolitan.
They were very much like, hey, you know what?
More
Let's
diversity.
Get somebody else with an accent in here.
Yeah.
And then you came in.
A little Euro flavor.
You made this folk hero speech against EA last time you were here, and everybody was like, this is the man.
Yep, okay.
They started painting your posters all over the wall. You're the voice of the consumer now, you know? It's big business, Greg Miller.
Well, no, I still, you know, it's been a long time since I was on the, back in the day.
Yeah.
When I was editing PC Gamer and other magazines, I used to be on that free game gravy train.
Oh, sure. That's why you want to work with us.
Well, the reality, the sad thing about it is you do kind of lose touch with what it's like to go out and spend money for games and play a game and like be disappointed. But the part that really kicks is like, I spent $50 for this.
Yeah.
And it sucks. I feel kind of burned by it. And it is easy to lose touch with that when you don't have to do that anymore. And I've been back buying games and, you know, just being like Johnny Consumer for a long time now. So yeah, I like to feel like I've rediscovered what it's like to just be a person, you know, playing and paying for and standing in line for video games like all the other.
Well, see, that's what I love about you in the shows you've done with us, in just knowing you as obviously a friend too throughout the years, is the fact that to this show you bring such a great perspective that so many of, you know, like Andrea and me and Tim and Andy, we're all in the same system of where we are right now in our careers, right? Whereas you did the whole PC Mag thing, you went off, you start writing movies and games, then you're playing games, but you know the industry from both this consumer and development side that I think is fascinating.
Thank you. Well, this is great. I'm happy to be aboard.
All right, cool.
This doesn't mean that you're my boss though, right?
Oh yeah, no, totally.
It does.
Yeah. For one day a week, just Widow Wednesdays.
Okay. This will be good. I need somebody to keep me in check.
Good. I need somebody to keep complimenting me. If you didn't know, this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about before giving you perspective, opinions, reading your questions, answering them, sometimes giving you bad PSN names, but mainly having a great time. If you like that, you can watch live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, but we don't check the chat. If you want to have a question read, you got to write in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. You can do it anytime, no matter when you're watching the show. However, if you want to correct us live, which we need you to do if you're watching on Twitch, go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening on podcast services around the globe.
I'm going to go for another perfect game today.
No corrections?
Like, I'm sure whatever your wrongs come in at the end.
Sure, they'll just be on me.
Directed solely at you.
Perfect.
People will not be able to find
any flaws. Go ahead
and
stack the deck. Yeah, go ahead and keep going that way.
We'll see.
Yeah, we will see. Housekeeping for you. There's a new party mode up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. It's part 2 of Friday the 13th. Nick is Jason. That, of course, also means there's a new party mode up on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames for $1. You can get next week's party mode now. And then Saturday, we are streaming video games all day long, 24 hours to raise money for Extra Life. If you want to donate or be part of the stream, please go to kindoffunny.com/extra life. Help us help the big, beautiful kids.
So I'm going to come in for that too on Saturday.
Sure, you better. That's hands on deck kind of funny thing.
We'll figure out a time for me to come in.
Sure.
And I definitely want to pitch in.
What do you want to play? What are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. Do you have a list of games that you're going to play?
We're keeping it loose this year. We're making assignments for where everybody's going to be, but then people can kind of play within there. And we also kind of cracked the code finally on how to play with subs and not have it be a disaster. Because in years past, you'd be like, hey, we're going to start at 1:00, so everybody get ready. And we'd go too late, and then we'd cancel something, and then people would get mad, understandably so.
I occasionally do this thing on with GamesBeat. They do a thing on Friday, PUBG. Games that they play with the community.
Yeah.
But it's a nightmare trying to, you know, you have to give out the password to the server, and then it's really, really hard to coordinate community co-play. Mm-hmm. But you guys have cracked the code?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we just play on PSN, and we're just like, hey, we're putting in sub-only mode. Shout out your PSN right now if you can play.
But I remember like when Giant Bomb used to do like Thursday Night Throwdown, it's always a nightmare trying to get people in.
You're herding cats.
Yes, it's very difficult.
Because people shout out their PSN, their name or whatever it is. They're not logged on yet, so you wait. They got the wrong firmware. It's a whole pain.
Well, the password's not working or
whatever. We'll figure it out.
Well, do you know what? So do you try to play games that are competitive, or do you do speed runs? Like,
Column A, a little from column B. It's dealer's choice.
Okay.
We have this Kind of Funny World Championship. We got to decide how that's going. We got to get Xavier Woods, commissioner of the Kind of Funny World Championship, on the phone, see how that's being defended. I want a Platinum Destiny. The Prince of Platinums, Josh Gravelick, says I can't, but I'm going to prove him wrong. I think Tim wants to get some more of the Mario moons.
Yeah.
You ever heard of the Super Mario Odyssey?
I have. I've heard about it.
It's pretty good. Time.
We'll talk
about
it today, I'm sure.
Okay, good.
You got to get those moons. Everything's just moons.
It's all moons.
And multi-moons.
No, the multi-moons. That's
the multi-moon.
Come on now.
There's nothing quite like that.
That's the best. That's the one you want.
Getting a multi-moon. So figure out. Let me know what you're doing, and I'll figure out a time to come in for a bit.
Don't give me. I'm your boss. Remember, don't give me tasks. I've got
to go through proper channels.
Exactly.
Now?
Talk to Joey if you want to talk to me. Right. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. 5 items on the Roper Report.
The Baker's Dozen.
Yeah, that's right, Kev. Number 1, Housemark has put up a post on their website saying, arcade is dead. Gary, I was floored when I read this.
I just read it this morning, and I too, my jaw was in a lowered position.
You know House Mark, listener, viewer. We're talking about Superstardust HD. We're talking about Dead Nation. We're talking about a whole bunch of other games.
Rezogun, which I love.
Rezogun, of course. Rezogun
is fantastic.
Right. Let's just read out loud. I'll get to all these. We're going to read the post here from the CEO of House Mark, who I respect so much. I won't butcher his name. I think so. I think it's really interesting.
I feel like it's newsworthy enough that it's okay to do it unabridged.
Thank you. Remember, you're my employee now. You're not. Was too long, you go, yeah, boss, good
I
job.
I feel like when I was doing this just as a favor, I could come in and do whatever I want. Now that this relationship has been formalized, I feel like there's a new dynamic emerging. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Housemark CEO writes, letter to fans. For more than 20 years, we've been carrying the torch for arcade, bringing arcade coin-op-inspired games to the market with a Housemark twist. And I think it's fair to say we've gotten pretty good at it by now. Our games have received great critical reception over the years, perhaps the best example being Nex Machina, which we published in June to great critical acclaim, garnering a Metacritic score of 88. Nex Machina was a dream project, as we got to work with our hero and arcade gaming legend, Eugene Jarvis. I jump ahead a bit. However, despite critical success and numerous awards, our games just haven't sold in significant numbers. While some of them have reached a massive audience due to free game offerings across various digital sales channels, this unfortunately doesn't help pay for development, which gets costly for high production quality. We are extremely grateful to our fans and partners who have enabled us to work on awesome games like Superstardust HD and Outland. For your unfailing love and support, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. But now, it's time to move on to new genres. Lackluster sales of Nex Machina have led us to thinking that it is time to bring our long-standing commitment to the arcade genre to an end. While this genre will always hold a special place in our hearts, the industry is moving more towards multiplayer experiences with strong, robust communities, and it's time for Housemark to move forward with the industry. Hence, Nex Machina and Matterfall will be the last of their kind coming out of our studio. Our purpose as a company remains the same, however, to create enjoyable and memorable gaming experiences for players while simultaneously creating a great workplace that allows people to flourish both professionally and personally. Looking ahead to our next projects, we are exploring something totally different than what you might expect from us, but we believe this will lead to the creation of even more engaging gaming experiences. Our core values remain the same: gameplay first with first-class execution. We are really excited about our new projects and look forward to unveiling our first game from the new era of Housemark. Holy shit. What an honest, unblinking response from Housemark on this. And just a very much like, hey, thank you for supporting us, person who would read this, but it's just not happening.
I mean, first of all, it's rare to read a statement as frank as that, don't you think? Mm. Usually what you get in terms of press releases, and we just saw this recently with Visceral, and the official line out of EA. It was pablum. It was just fluff.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of word salad. And you go, what does that mean?
We're going to say a lot, but say nothing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You've said a lot of stuff I didn't really understand. You said nothing at the same time. But this is a remarkably frank.
And this is what I love about where we're at in the industry, is that you have developers that are not this small. Like, I'm insulting Housemark. Housemark's a great studio, but that no one owns them. They can say
what
they want
to say. Yeah, they're not responsible to shareholders or whatever. They can just say whatever they want. Now, beyond that, of course, this is, I think, it's interesting what's interesting about this, I mean, they chose the title. They didn't just say, we're getting out of the arcade games business. They said arcade is dead. It almost was like this is a broader statement. They're basically saying, we're getting out of this business because this genre of games, classic, old school, coin-op inspired arcade shooters.
Yeah.
That's a dead business now, so we're getting out. That's a much broader statement, and also a very, certainly for gamers of a certain age like me, quite a sad statement to make, but hard to argue with.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right, is that they are at the top of that pyramid. They're the king of the castle, the king of the hill when it comes to arcade games like that, because, yeah, Rezogun is awesome. Dead Nation is awesome. Nex Machina is awesome, but they're being out there saying, hey, when you think of a great game, when you think of gameplay is king, when you think about who's doing these games right, we are unequivocally doing them right, and we can't make a business out of it.
Okay, so why? Why? I mean, they've been very upfront in saying, look, people just ain't, we're making, it's not that the games suck.
Yeah.
They're great. They're making, they are the state of the art for like what an old school arcade, like Rezogun is basically Defender within a cylinder.
Yep. Yeah, right?
And it's brilliantly done. It's beautiful. It's great. It has all the classic twitch based, like it presses all the buttons that Defender and Stargate and those games back in the day did, but with, you know, fancier graphics.
Sure.
Why are video game players no longer responding to those games? Because they're saying people ain't buying the games. That's the problem.
I think it's a niche market. And I think that much like when we talk about like I was talking on the Bombcast yesterday about like Bethesda and the performance of Evil Within 2 and Dishonored 2, what were their goals? What were their sales goals? Was that game a success to them? I think for Housemarque, they are a fairly large independent studio that makes great games. But if you're going to get more people in there, you figure they had to have hired more people to work on these two projects, right? Because Matterfall and Nex Machina came out within months of each other, which is rare for a Housemarque game.
Right.
You figure they, I would assume, grew to an extent of, hey, we need to be able to produce these games. And then they produced those games and they didn't sell that much. It's always the thing of what a success to EA is very different than what's a success to the development team of seven people.
I mean, I don't disagree that this kind of game has become a niche genre. Certainly it has. It just really only at the indie level, which is fine. You don't need AAA budgets to make these games. Sure. That's part of the appeal. But, you know, there's always been a Geometry Wars or Super Stardust or something out there plugging away. And I understand that it has retreated into a niche genre, but now it seems like it might be... I think it will still always be around, but it seems like increasingly now what you're going to get is stuff like Pac-Man Champion Edition DX, where the brand, people will always be looking for, Pac-Man, I know what that is. And I love Championship Edition DX. It's fantastic. And there will always be games like that. But the original ones, the Resoguns, the Geometry Wars, the Super Stardust, if they're going away, that's really sad. And maybe younger gamers who grew up a generation after the likes of me will feel less sad about it because they don't have that same connection. But as someone who remembers the days of pumping, for me, it used to be like 10p pieces and 50 pence pieces into an arcade game in a back corner of some dusty video arcade, that was the shit. That was what got me into video games. That's what I loved. I used to love arcade games and coin-ops. And obviously arcades have gone away, but that style of gameplay was surviving, and now this feels like a big bellwether. Like if Housemarque are getting out, like one of the top developers are saying we're getting out because it's just not viable anymore. I feel like this kind of video game, which is so specifically connected, its roots go all the way back to the genesis of video games of Space Invaders and Pong and Defender. If that's going away, that's really sad.
But here's my question for you. Isn't this, if we talk about Housemarque leaving this space, the arcade space, and then say, well, arcade games in general are dying, and I mean arcade games on a digital platform, not an arcade, aren't we doing the same thing we're doing to single player? Where, sure, the people who were doing it the best are leaving it and going to go in a different direction, but isn't that, in a way, and this isn't me insulting the games, them growing up, them taking this next step to a bigger game, a bigger project? Because my argument would be that, you know, for your Geometry Wars, your things, that these are simple games, great graphics, different things, people can put twists on them and stuff. I still think that the independent market has the ability to make those. I still think when you put together, hey, we're this new studio and we're trying stuff out and we just want to focus on gameplay, they're going to make something like that and they're going to put that out and that'll be have a chance for a greater success because there's less baggage. Whereas I really feel like Housemarque comes out of the gate, does Super Stardust, and then expectations begin. They start signing different deals. They start growing and growing and growing. But they get to this point that the smaller games they've made in the past for a dedicated audience just aren't paying the bills.
I don't think there's anything. I don't feel like games like Resogun or Geometry Wars or Pac-Man DX or any of those kind of classic video game, those old coin-up style titles. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they are any. I don't think of those as like kids' games.
Oh yeah, and that's not what I mean.
Simplicity.
That's not what I mean.
They are often the greatest barometer of your skill as a gamer. It's like, what's your high score in Defender?
Hell yeah.
Or, Pac-Man.
Nex Machina is tough if you want to get through there. Seriously. Resogun is tough.
I mean, you could argue that is like Twitch gameplay distilled down to its purest essence. And I think there will always be, apparently a shrinking, but there will always be a market for it. Yeah. I think just what's happened is the gaming has evolved so much around it. And you're looking like Assassin's Creed Origins and Battlegrounds and even something like Mario Odyssey, where they took a classic concept and it's continued to evolve and grow and become more and more sophisticated, but while still retaining that classic feel. Games that are unapologetically kind of throwback retro style games, within the context of everything else around them, maybe they do look like, maybe they look less appealing. And again, the kind of people who have a natural affinity to those games of my age, who remember playing them back in the day, where there's some nostalgic appeal, maybe we're just aging out of the market, and gamers that are coming up, you know, the younger generations of gamers just don't have that same connection to those games, the historical connection.
Right, the letter here says, the industry is moving towards multiplayer experiences with strong, robust communities, and it's time for Housemarque to move forward with the industry.
But would there be a way, though, to combine those two? Could a very smart developer create a brilliant Defender or a Stargate or a Tempest-style game that actually could work in a multiplayer social community context? I don't know.
I would think so.
That would be an amazing thing to try to do.
Because here's my thing. I think when you read this, I'm putting Mario Odyssey into that conversation, because Mario Odyssey right now is a community movement. When I talk to somebody else who plays games, they're playing Mario Odyssey, and we get to talk about it. Similar to when Pac-Man Championship Edition originally hit, and Dave Clayman was obsessed with it. All of IGN was obsessed with it. We all talked about it, right?
Right.
The games from Housemarque, while great, the more and more they put out, the less and less special it gets. And I'm not insulting Housemarque. I'm just saying, like, Super Stardust, everybody was all over. And Dead Nation, people, I remember having conversations with Shu and Sid on Twitter about Dead Nation. But Nex Machina did feel like I was playing in a vault by myself.
Super Mario is in the air supply right now because it's so great, and everyone, it's like, you know, 2 million copies in a week or whatever, and everyone's playing it, and it's the game of the moment for sure, and well deserved. It's a fantastic game, but that's still unapologetically a closed off single player. It's not like someone else can jump into New Donk City with you and start playing with you.
Right.
What I'm saying is, and I'm just completely making this up as I go, would it be possible to resurrect the classic coin op shooter arcade genre by finding some way to make it social and multiplayer connected? Maybe I drop into your game of, you know, whatever it is, you know, Resogun or Geometry Wars Superstar, whatever it may be. Is there a way to kind of bring that multiplayer, that social appeal, and resurrect a classic genre that way? I have no idea how you would even be. I'm just asking the question.
I totally think so. I go back to last year when I fell in love with a game called Sparkade. You ever play this on your mobile device? Sparkade.
Okay.
Yeah, Greg Kinesa, the guy who started Xbox Live, got over on this thing and started this game up. Of course, disclosure, after we talked about it and interviewed Greg Kinesa and I started playing it, we did do a sponsorship with them at the end of the year. So take it with a grain of salt if you want. But the idea was that I love Tetris. Sparkade took Tetris and a couple other classic games, put them into this mobile app, and then had it where you could go challenge other players, and you could earn tokens in the thing to then bet on token only thing, or you could put real money in and play for real money and bet other people. But what was interesting about it is it took everything I love about trophies or Xbox Live and put it into one thing where I was leveling up, which unlocked me new avatars, which unlocked me better daily bonuses. Then when I'm playing people, I could add them to my friends list, so I would have challenges going back and forth with my friends. So suddenly Tetris, which had always been a very solitary experience, I'm just playing it on the Game Boy, I'm playing it wherever, suddenly became, oh, I'm now playing games of Tetris with a dozen kind of funny best friends out there. Not for real money, some for real money, whatever. But I'm playing into that thing and doing it where I feel like all of a sudden there was a Sparkade community doing it.
Wondering what the real, in trying to diagnose this,
yeah,
I'm wondering what the real issue is. Is it that people only want games that have some kind of social multiplayer connection? Super Mario Odyssey would seem to suggest no, because that, again, is a single player experience. There's no social or multiplayer aspects. And yet it's so well done. Everyone, of course, is loving it, and it's fantastic and doing very well. So is it then, is the problem simply that even if you added multiplayer and social aspects to, you know, a classic arcade style shooter, you know, done in a modern style,
yeah,
that people would still look at it and say, that feels old fashioned to me. Like, it's still like 2D Twitch shooting. I understand that it has historical roots, but like, I just, gaming tastes, again, as more generations of gamers are growing up that grew up after that coin op, that arcade genre, that don't have that sentimental connection to it. It just it doesn't appeal to them the same way. I mean, it may well be, as sad as it is, that like a style of music that's never really going to come back. That this is just, that this kind of gaming is just now out of fashion, and will forever be the province of like crusty old gamers like you and me.
Well, I think it'll always come back into fashion, though. I think there'll always be a breakout genre.
Yeah, like the 80s will come back again and again.
Exactly.
Right?
I think what I think this letter to me says is that for arcade, for Housemarque is dead, because there's a ceiling to that. Those kind of games right now, based on their extensive experience, only sell so many and only get so far. And Housemarque wants to be a developer that's around another 10, 20 years.
I would say the good news about it, though, is that because this style of game is so, I don't mean this as a pejorative, but it's primitive, right? You don't need fancy graphics.
Yeah.
It's a very, like Defender and Pac-Man and Space Invaders are very simple ideas simply executed, but there's something inherently compelling and about them. You know, you want to keep playing, you want to keep pumping the quarters in. That's why those games are classics. The good news about that is because the barrier to development potentially is so low, there will always be indie developers that can afford to keep plugging away and trying those things.
Exactly.
Like there's a game on Steam right now called 20XX. I don't know if you've played it, but it's essentially Mega Man on PC.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. It's a brilliant game. If you love Mega Man, it's an incredible
game. I remember
kind of amazed they got away with it, frankly, because it is really cheeky. Like the degree to which it is Mega Man is astonishing. But it's a little developer. And I can't imagine it cost them a lot of money to make it. So you can still, you know, if that's your nostalgia, you have to remember, like, people making games are still the ones that grew up with that original genre. Where we're going to be 2-3 generations from now, who knows? But for right now, there are people that still want to harken back. And I would argue that considering it is the original genre, that it is, you know, those kind of games are where gaming began, that there will always be some fondness for them, but I think it's going to become less and less. You'll always be able to find these games, but the day of them being a genre that you would put a lot, you know, you've got your, it's like no one makes flight sims anymore, right? Yeah. No one makes real-time strategy games really anymore.
Well, we were talking about this right at the PlayStation conference. Oh, they're putting out a tennis game. Oh, right. What happened to the tennis game genre? Oh, they're putting out arcade racer games. Like, oh yeah. Remember when there was a million of those? There was everywhere you looked, there was a tennis game. Everywhere you looked, it was Motorstorm.
Any given time, there's a subset of game genres that are in vogue, right? Yeah. So like right now, obviously, first person shooters continue to be popular. Open world, Assassin's Creed, exploring sandbox type games.
Yeah.
GTA, they're very, you know, everyone's kind of chasing that because that's where the big things are. And like you said, fashions change, and you know, flared trousers will be back again soon.
Oh,
I'm
God,
sure.
No.
And the 90s are back right now, and the 80s will be back again in 20 more years. This it's weird to think, but this age that we're living in, 30, 40 years from now, will have a comeback.
Oh yeah,
right. Everything goes around in this great circle of life. But again, as bottom line, as someone who grew up on this old style of game, as inevitable as it is, as you know, kind of just the seismic geological evolution of this art form continues, that things are going to continue to are going to increasingly disappear into the past. They'll always have historical significance, but less and less will they be the kind of games that we play today. And it's inevitable, and maybe it's just it's a reality, but it personally saddens me.
It personally saddens Eric, who wrote into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, "Hey, Greg and Gary, I went to look at the gaming news for the day and I saw a strange headline. Arcade is dead. I didn't think much of it until my eyes wandered to the source. That is when my heart sank. Housemarque Games, holy shit. I'm sure many of us know the feeling of watching a niche genre, series, or game struggle despite their quality and the passion that goes into them, but this one is extra hard to see. Greg talks about how in Game of the Year discussions, people at places like IGN will campaign for their game, and one they know doesn't deserve the mainstream appeal to win in the votes, but feels deserving of the title nonetheless. For me, that would have been Nex Machina. Nex Machina is perfect, actually perfect, but it is a perfect arcade game. And I guess that is just not good enough. I don't think that arcade games are dead. I think that if a genre can make good games, it will last forever. For now, though, a moment of silence as a great arcade games take a pause for however long that may be. Good luck to Housemarque on whatever they do next. Long live the kings of gameplay. P.S. Everyone should still go out and buy Nex Machina, and I believe it is getting a physical release soon. Also, Matterfall, while not perfect, is still a solid Housemarque game and currently on sale on the PlayStation Store.
I'm going to pick up Nex Machina. I see, I'm part of the problem. I like
you
these games.
You son of a bitch. You didn't even pick it up?
I should get it.
You should. It's real good. It's awesome. Like, that's the thing is, like, you play it, and it's great, and you run through it, but it's the same thing I have always, with the exception of Dead Nation, which really pulled me in. Alienation I liked a lot and would have gotten into deeper if there wasn't the bug like there always is in a Housemarque game for people with a million friends. It's the thing of you play them over and over and again. And I feel like that's what's not in vogue anymore, is playing games over and over again to try to get a better score, to try to get, because you figure
what we consider like the vernacular of games, like high, like when's the last time you talked about your high score in a video game?
Right.
That's old man talk.
Yeah, leaderboards aren't even right? Really
like
big of a deal anymore.
What we used to call clocking a game, where you get to like 99999 and the score resets.
Mm-hmm.
High scores are gone. Like you don't think about high score anymore. Like your achievements in games are have evolved so much. I mean, there's so many more sophisticated ways to measure achievement In a game.
Yeah.
But the idea of like a high score, that's something that exists in like, you know, classic game tournaments and things that they still have, like Donkey Kong tournaments and sure. stuff. But it's no longer part of how, it's just no longer part of how games are designed.
And that's back to what they're talking about, I really feel, with the multiplayer community stuff. Not even like, oh, it's got, they're going to make fucking Destiny. The way that it is just like, how do you excite a community? How do you make people interested in, like, what is the high score? What is the new high score for video games? And it is, in Destiny, it's loot. It's this armor. In, you know, it's a chicken dinner in PUBG. It's all these different things that you get proud of, but you're not proud of the fact that, hey, I mean, even I don't even hear, and granted, I don't play much multiplayer stuff, as everybody knows, in terms of shooters. You don't hear about kill-death ratio that much anymore, is where, for a while, that was the big stat.
Oh, I think you do. Battlegrounds, it's still a big metric.
Okay.
But I know what you mean. The metrics have become so much more sophisticated. Mm-hmm. Do you remember, I miss putting my initials into high score tables. Do you still remember, like, what were your...
Oh, GJM.
GGM?
GJM.
GJM.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What's the J?
James. Greg okay. James Miller. Gregory
yeah.
James Miller.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I used to do GLW. That was always me.
What's the L for?
L? Leslie. That's my middle name.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're learning a lot about you now.
I know. Well, now that I'm on the team, I feel like
we have to fill out paperwork at some point.
It's time to start opening up.
Number two. EA is not rushing to the Switch. This is according to the Wall Street Journal, whose tech reporter put out this Dow Jones Newswire screen cap. EA in no rush to make more video games for Nintendo Switch. Market talk. Electronic Arts is waiting until Nintendo's new Switch has been on the market a full year before deciding whether to release more games for it besides FIFA 18, the company's finance chief, Blake Jorgensen, tells the Wall Street Journal. The Switch, both a home console and portable gaming device, launched in March, and EA's soccer game was released on it late September. Jorgensen says it's too soon for EA to judge the success of FIFA 18 on the device and wants to fully understand what the demand is for Switch before committing more resources to it. Just to toss out there, because we're always worrying, talking about what a third party is going to do for the Switch. Where's that going?
Yeah.
I think with the success it's seeing, they'll have to figure it out if they want to be on.
They'll have to figure it out. But again, I also don't care that much.
Yeah.
Again, if
you want Nintendo,
I think that the Switch at this point, it's funny, you look up, go back in the Wii and the Wii U, the conversation was, for a big part of it, well, can such a system survive without major support from the likes of EA and Activision?
Yeah.
And the answer at the time seemed to be no.
Yeah.
Now that Nintendo has really got its house in order so much more, where they get so many, like, more great AAA releases in the first year than you typically see over the whole life of an old style, like a GameCube or whatever.
Yeah.
And again, we've talked about this a million times, such great indie support. I don't think they need them. Yeah. I don't think they need EA. I don't think they need Activision. And again, if you want to play Battlefront 2 or Destiny or whatever, chances are, again, we talked about maybe Switch is the first Nintendo console that's viable as like the one and only console that you own.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing most people have an Xbox or a PlayStation as well.
Or a PC.
Just go over there. You're going to play the EA and the Activision, the big AAA high system spec games with big multiplayer communities. And again, Switch, that's one thing Switch can't offer you is like multiplayer community. Just go over there. The Switch will be over here doing its own thing.
If Switch continues its momentum, though, where people are like, every time a game gets announced, they're like, is it running on Switch? You know what I mean? Is happening there? I think EA is going to see dollar signs in that. I think Activision will see dollar signs
in that. Yeah, they're going to go where the money is. There's obviously still, you know, looking at the viability of it. It's probably still more expensive to make. When they say making a game for the Switch, I would much rather, here's what I'd much rather do.
Yeah.
If I was head of EA, or certainly as a consumer looking at them, I would rather EA, rather than them saying, well, yeah, here's FIFA on the Switch, here's, you know, Battlefield, you know, 1 on the Switch or whatever, create a Switch games division and make games that are tailored for the Switch that work great for the Joy-Cons, rather than trying to say, oh shit, how do we make Madden work with the Joy-Cons this year? And that's how we have all those bad versions of those games. Build for the system. Don't just port over stuff and try and shoehorn it into a system that is technically inferior, because it is.
Yep.
Is multiplayer inferior, is very wacky in its control scheme. Nintendo does well, and indie developers do well on the Switch, because they build games for the Switch and play to its strengths. Do that. Create a Switch division inside of EA and say, make great games for the Switch. And clearly at this point, you said we're seeing indie developers saying we're seeing better sales on Switch than any other platform. Maybe the time is right to do that. But I don't care about Battlefield or you know, the big EA games on the Switch. I'll play those somewhere else on systems that are better tailored for those games.
You're preaching the word there. I think that's what the success will be. And what I honestly think will happen is that as the Switch marketplace becomes flooded, there are so many games out there and indies start to see less success, not none or anything, but it becomes like PSN or Xbox Live where there's just way too much stuff, where a developer like Housemarque is being overshadowed just by the sheer number of games. I feel like that's when EA or Activision can be like, hey, let's partner with this game. You guys, come pitch us your cool game that is indie, but we want to put on Switch.
Yeah, Nintendo want to help you. It's in their interest to have EA on the platform, but in the right way. Because it's not helpful to anyone. It's not helpful to EA or to Nintendo to see storylines like, oh, yeah, here's Battlefront 2 on the Switch, but it kind of sucks compared to the other versions.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that. Like, build games for the Switch. Make the best games you can. Again, encourage more, you know, mid-range indie development, lower risk, but potentially big rewards because the Switch is clearly, you know, exploding as a platform. I think there's a big opportunity for EA. I'd like to think there are people smart enough inside EA that they're already giving this a hard look. Yeah. They're just not ready to announce anything right now.
Of course.
It was easy to ignore the other previous Nintendo systems because they just weren't, there's no viability there. The Switch is a different story right now. It's completely changed the game in terms of the way that developers and the public are looking at Nintendo. You just got to build games for it instead of trying to jam in things that don't really belong on that platform.
Correct, Gary Whitta. You're a smart man.
I got it right.
That's why we hired you.
I'm going to say that I got this one right.
Okay, good.
My opinion is correct.
Yeah, well, don't write into kindoffunny.com/you're wrong with opinion corrections. Try them with my facts. Opinion. Here comes a bullshit story. Number three, Gary Whitta is returning to The Walking Dead.
What is this? How did this get in the running order?
Apparently, so what they did is they announced that they're doing a Telltale Walking Dead collection. It's coming out December 5th on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. It is every episode of The Walking Dead, the Telltale series, before the new thing, because they're doing one final season. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I'm just reading about it now. They're doing a final season of The Walking
Dead.
Buried
in their press release about this Walking Dead collection, they say, in addition to the announcement of this upcoming collection, coming out December 5th, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Telltale also confirmed that Gary Whitta, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, The Book of Eli, will be returning to Telltale's writer's room as a story consultant for the series' upcoming fourth and final season. Whitta was part of the BAFTA award-winning team of writers on the first season of the Telltale series and will be collaborating with Telltale and the creative team at Skybound Entertainment on the final chapters of Clementine's story. Quote, collaborating with Telltale on the first season of Clementine's
journey. Do you really need to do that voice?
That's how I read this quote from Gary Whitta. Yeah. Collaborating with Telltale on the first season of Clementine's journey through the world of The Walking Dead was one of the highlights of my career. So reuniting with them to bring her now Sir story to a close
you're
with the final season feels what
I nailed. If you're gonna do it, if you're gonna read my words,
Oi, Governor, collaborating with the Telltale on the first Clementine. Highlights of my career. So reuniting with them to now bring her story to close with a final season feels like a homecoming, said Whitta. Clementine has become not just one of the most compelling characters in the Walking Dead pantheon. Well, I can tell you actually wrote this. But one of the great video game characters of all time. I hope we're able to do justice to her and to her millions of fans. This one feels special.
Who writes this stuff?
You did, apparently.
Full of just hot air.
Joe Stauffer came over and was like, just give me a quote.
Talking about PR pablum earlier, like words, meaningless word salad. I guess I'm as guilty of it as the next man.
Well, this is the problem, right? They come to you, hey, give us a quote about this thing you're writing.
They asked me for a quote, and I bashed one out. They asked me for a headshot. I said, I don't have any good ones. Good luck with Google image search.
You're just going to be that one in the Star Wars helmet again.
I have to find someone that can do a decent, I mean, I don't think it's possible, but like a decent headshot of me,
because we got a guy.
People ask, like literally whenever I'm in the news on whatever it is, like people go on Google search and they put like literally like a holiday snap or whatever.
Yeah.
There's no actual picture of me. That's
well,
a,
now that
that's
you're
decent.
Part of Team Kinda Funny, we do have photo shoots all the time for new.
Oh, well, maybe I could get.
We'll
a
get
decent,
Sean Finnegan,
get
the
a
shark.
Headshot.
We'll take one for you, and then we can add it to the Reddit too, because the subreddit's got all our faces up there. We're gonna put your face up there.
That's great.
There's a lot of work. A lot of things gotta change now that you're here. You know?
Yeah. I feel like this. I'm gonna be professional. Is it gonna be like a shopping montage where you take me like to all the finest places?
Yeah. Walking Gary,
like, remake me.
You're
like,
getting new T-shirts. Eliza, all kind of funny
Eliza Doolittle me into someone more respectable. So this is cool.
This is great. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's so weird because I honestly, this is a complete coincidence that I knew that they were going to announce this, but I didn't know the day.
The day that you
and I knew
the
I was
story.
Coming back in here, but I didn't know the day, and ended up being the same day.
That's awesome. Are you, there's a lot of pressure. You excited? You got to end Clementine's story. You got to land this plane.
It's really interesting. There's only so much I can say about it.
Of course.
It's really interesting that I was talking to someone about this the other day that, you know, there are many different iterations of The Walking Dead, but the ones that I consider like the three kind of main cornerstone pillars of it are, of course, the comic,
yeah,
the AMC TV show,
yeah,
and I think legitimately the Telltale games. I 100%. Think they've earned that the right to be spoken of in the same breath with the TV show and the comic books. This will be the first iteration of The Walking Dead to come to a definitive end. This story, Clementine's sure. story, is going to end. And so we had to, I've already been in the writer's room and sat around with a lot of the talented Telltale writers to figure out like what is going to be Clementine's journey and what's going to be her story as we now bring, because it won't be anymore. This is the last time Telltale's going to do one of these games. So yeah. You can't just leave it there. Like you have to, there has to be an end. The story has to end in a way that is satisfying for all the players out there who love Clementine and love this particular world.
No.
So it's a big, there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. You know, I'm one of those people.
I know.
So if you screw it up, you're right here.
You love it.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree.
And I love Clem. And I remember when I did my episode of The Walking Dead, playful threats. Like, you better not hurt Clementine.
Yeah.
Because people came to really love her.
Yeah.
And she really is one of the great characters. And it's a lot of, we do set definitely like collectively all the people in that room that are responsible for figuring out how to bring Clementine's story to a definitive conclusion. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I agree with you as a Walking Dead fan since, graphic novel number two, right? Back in 2005 when I found The Walking Dead. I agree that I think the Telltale games are one of, if not the best iteration of The Walking Dead. And granted, you're stacking the deck. I'm making the choices. I'm building these relationships. I'm getting really invested.
Yeah, you feel
in this
invested
world.
Because you're making those choices. Yeah.
But yeah, it's outside of what? Walking Dead 100, issue 100. I teared up reading that, but I cried playing The Walking Dead, right?
Does it kill you that I know how Clementine's story ends, but I won't tell you?
No.
You're okay with not knowing?
Yeah, no, I don't want to ruin it for him.
You're not like a spoiler. Yeah, because you say you're not the kind of person that has to know the spoilers, right?
No, not at all. And that's the thing where it's Telltale will always be like, hey, we got the PC version of the game done. We can bring it by. I'm like, I'll wait for PlayStation 4.
I was hoping it was something I'd be able to torture you with, but it's not.
No,
I can't hold it over
you at
all.
I won't give you that. I won't give you that kind of thing. I'll give you a lot of suggestions.
You want
to
give me the satisfaction?
Episode one, just get rid of AJ. This baby, we don't need him.
The little baby, yeah.
Yeah, just get him. Because that was the problem with the season two. They didn't give me the option just to leave this baby behind.
That's an option you were looking for. Abandon a baby.
I'm a kid. There's a baby. There's zombies. I ain't got time for this.
How do you usually like to play? Do you like to try and? Are you more of a paragon or a renegade when you play through these kind of games?
I really read the situation, and I think that speaks to the power of what the game is in the fact that it's not. I'm
but
only
do you generally
make good choices.
Try to do the right thing?
I think the Telltale Walking Dead games have done a great job of showing you how really you would transition into a gray area / everybody's the villain here. Because with Lee at the outbreak, with Clem, you guys played with our emotions. You gave us a kid to protect that we all fell in love with. So yeah. It was very much like, I'm fine. But when you get to your episode four of Walking Dead, right? And that guy's like, listen, man, she should come with us. We're better. That was definitely one of the most memorable times I grabbed him. I'm like, we're going hard on this guy. I'm like, get the fuck away from us. You don't talk to me like that. You don't talk to her like that.
It's really interesting. I don't think even the guys at Telltale fully realize just how powerful that connection to Clementine was going to be. Like I said, yeah. I got these kind of mock death threats over it. Don't hurt her.
Yeah.
Because you really wanted to protect her. And I remember, it's funny, a lot of the ways that it's so instructive. I learned so much working with Telltale just on that first season and what's really interesting, when you do episodically, you're getting feedback from episode one while you're working on episodes three and four or whatever. So you're seeing how people are reacting to the characters. And I remember a lot of people, remember Ben from season one?
Oh, yeah. I hated Ben.
Everyone hated Ben because he was the guy. Every zombie group has that guy that the well intentioned, but sooner or later he's gonna get you all fucking killed.
Yeah,
because he's incompetent or whatever. He's just not a survivor. And we tried to build the character in that way, and we were getting all this feedback. Can you please give us the opportunity to fucking kill Ben? I hate Ben. And oh my god, this son of a bitch Ben. I want to kill him. We're like, okay. So when we got to my episode, there's a moment where you can let kill him, but you can let him die.
He's hanging
from a bell tower, and you can choose to either pull him up or let him go. And we tried to stack that choice in a way that would encourage people. Like, it was okay to let him go. Like, he was literally, at that point in the story, he had recognized that he was a danger to the group.
Yeah.
And he was literally saying to Lee, just let me go. You know it's the right thing to do. I want you to let me go. and we had playtesters come in and play it, and every single person saved him. And we were like, you've been begging for this choice. You've been begging for this opportunity to kill him. We gave it to you, and none of you took it. And they were like, when the moment came, I just couldn't do it. Like, I had to save him.
Yeah.
And so we had to go back. And when that happens, that's a broken choice, because you want people to have a hard time making the choice. It can't be too easy one way or the other. So we actually had to go back and find ways to stack the deck against Ben more so that people would be more inclined. And I think in the end, it ended up like 2/3 to 1/3, which is still not as close to 50-50 as I would have liked, but like, we pulled it back.
Yeah.
You know how we did it? Huh. We had him in danger Clementine.
Mm.
We were like, see, let's do a moment where Clementine's in trouble and he abandons her.
Yeah.
And in that moment...
That's the first... that's when you're in the streets, right? And like, they all come climbing and he runs the other way.
So that was kind of like a reshoot. We had to reshoot that scene because the playtest demonstrated the choice was broken. That not again, even though people are going to drop Ben because they hate him, people are telling us. But it's a big difference between what you say and what you'll actually do given the choice.
Yeah.
When you say, okay, put up or shut up time. You want to kill him? You've been asking to kill him all season. Here you go. And nobody killed him. So we had to go back. And we're like very careful about whenever we do a Clementine, because we know that players respond to her so powerfully. It's like she's like the kryptonite to play it. So like, we don't want to use her all the time, but we need, it's like, what can we do? It's like, I think he needs to put Clem in danger, because we knew that people would have such a visceral reaction to that. And it worked. People started dropping him.
Yeah. See, and that's what's fascinating, because that whole thing, that was one of my choices. Why I was like, I was already against you. You have to, similar to what you're saying in the writer's room, right? As a player, I had to have a one sentence description of what my objective was.
Right.
And my objective was always protect Clem, get Clem from point A.
That's always number one.
Clem is my thing. So like, yeah, Ben, I already knew he was a threat to the group. I was like, well, you're out of this. You jump ahead to season two where you were playing as Clem. That's when I started being a little more like, I'm going to be cool for the most part. I'm going to be guarded with these people that I don't know. Rebecca's being a bitch to me. I'm going to be a bitch back to her and threaten her with information that I know about, like, the, you know, the father of her kid or stuff. But then, like, getting in, and I'm spoiling season two right now. You should have played by now. When we get in there, like, Michael Madsen's character is about to get beat down or whatever. Carver, I believe his name was. And it was like, I wanted to stay. I made Clem stay to watch that. Because, like, we're transitioning. We're sliding into the darkness here. And, like, she knows the world there. And people are trying to pull her away. And they're saying stuff like, but you're just a kid or whatever. And it's like, no, we're not a kid. I'm not a kid in this world anymore. That's not where we are in The Walking Dead. And when you get to the end of season two, and this is the AJ joke I made, right? We get there and it's Kenny and what was Christine's, like, do you remember Christine Lakin's character's name? I want to say Christine, but that's not right. It's Kenny and Christine Lakin's character, and they're battling around. And I remember playing this in, you know, obviously I know the Telltale people super well. I'm playing this in a theater with my choices already laid out. And they're wrestling around, and everybody knows that I'm Mr. Kenny. I love Kenny. I was so excited to have Kenny back.
I had a soft spot for Kenny myself.
And it helps that, you know, like Gavin Hammond, who's been on the Game Over Greggy show and stuff, voices Kenny. So there's like that connection too. Just in the same way, you know, we know Melissa so well, and she's Clem. But I'm sitting there, they battle, and I let Kenny kill Christine Lakin's character, and I have the gun drawn, and I don't do anything. And I'll never forget this. Then Kenny came back up. And like, it gave me the option to draw the gun on him or whatever, shoot him. And I drew the gun. And there, Laura from Telltale in the back gasped, because everyone thought they knew me and how I would end this game. But I got to this point, and it was the point for me where it was like totally broken for Clem, of just like, I'm Clem and I gotta survive. And he's crazy now. And you pull that gun on him, and he's just like, just do it. And like, it's another one of those things of like, he knows he's gone. He knows he's not the Kenny we all fell in love with. And to shoot him right in the head and have him drop over, it was great. But then we got to the moment of like, she doubles back to get AJ. And I felt, for me, that was a break of just like, I guess at that, I went ice cold on it, right? Like, my Clem went ice cold and killed one of the connections to Lee, which is one of the connections to regular life and these relationships she had. So for me, I would have been like, see the baby in the car and just shut, it will kill the baby probably, but shut the car door and leave.
That is one of the appeal of those games, is even though they're single player games, they're strangely social. If you play them with other people, you on the couch, everyone's invested. Everyone's kind of pitching in like, no, don't make this choice, make the other choice, because everyone's got an opinion.
Yep.
But only one person gets to drive. And I enjoy playing those games with my wife when, you know, you like, if you've got, sometimes you don't get enough time, but like, if you've got, what should I do? And it's fun to kind of get other people playing along with you. And they work socially as well. When you play them live, everyone's like, oh, you know, in the Twitch stream, like, oh, don't do this.
Well, I mean, some of my most cherished IGN memories harken back to what we're talking about with Housemarque, right? And what I think a multiplayer experience, a robust community means nowadays, is the fact that I'd come home or come back to IGN after playing it or whatever, and Mitch Dyer would have played it that night too. And the first thing we would do is pour coffees and go into a meeting room and shut
compare
the door.
Notes.
What did you do? How did you, why would you do that? What happens? And like figure out. And that's the whole thing when people are like, I hate it when people talk about these games and they're like, it's the illusion of choice. There's no real choices, blah, blah, blah. But like there would be these intense discussions of how this happened and why that happened. Like I always talk about, you start at the same point, you go wide, and then you have to come back to the same ending. And that, that's what was great is great about those kind of games.
Yeah, I'm really glad that they're that we're doing this this final season, and we, like I said, going to try to do justice to a character that people over the years have really grown to love. Have a lot of affection for. I'm glad they're doing this. I don't know if you mentioned on this collection here, they've remastered everything, which is really nice.
Oh,
so you
I
get every so you get everything, all the DLC, all in one box. But they've remastered all the graphics, so they just look a little fresher than they did first time around.
Cool.
Yeah.
Number four on the longest Roper report of all time. Some sales numbers to chew on. This is from IGN. Financial results for the second quarter of fiscal year 2017 reveal that Sony Interactive Entertainment set 4.2 million units to retailers this quarter, bringing up the lifetime total of the PlayStation 4 to 67.5 million units shipped. Remember, this isn't sold, just shipped to retailers. These numbers result in the company raising the predictions for PlayStation 4 to meet 79 million units shipped by March 2018.
What is the current state? I know PlayStation's ahead, but do you know off the top of your head what the rough numbers are in terms of like installed? Like how many, like in homes, how many PlayStation 4s and how many Xbox Ones there are?
Well, that's the thing. I think in kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. This is definitely one that
this
we'll
is a perfect. I've teed you up
me.
Perfectly.
You got me. I want to say what PlayStation. The last time we reported was 65, and I want to say that was sold through. I don't think that was just shipped.
PS4.
Yeah.
In homes.
I think so.
Right.
I think so.
And is that worldwide?
That's worldwide.
Okay.
And then Xbox never talks about their numbers.
They don't talk about their numbers, which means they're way behind.
Oh yeah, and so I think like there's been some creative science and sleuthing that I think pegged them around 40 million a while back, maybe. But that
I know it's a nice thing in the universe of bragging rights to say, you know, we've sold this many more than the other guy.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter that much. If all Xbox, the Microsoft cares about, like, are we making a ton of money just, you know, in our own right? And the guys across the street might be making more, and we'll always try to catch up. But all they, as long as they're profitable in their own right, that's enough, I guess.
People always talk about the console wars, right? And I hate that because it makes us get into sides and argue about stupid stuff. And granted,
it's so boring.
I make fun of PC a lot, but I'm joking about it. Play wherever you want to play. What I like about the console race is the fact that PlayStation being so far ahead makes Xbox try harder. And they've made so many great gamer-first decisions in the time since they announced the Xbox One.
Yeah, the competition is great. And because the only way you can get ahead is by offering people a better deal.
And so let's say that starts turning the corner. Xbox One X does this great thing. We're about to talk about PUBG. That brings more people in. Then suddenly PlayStation has to look at what Xbox has done with backwards compatibility, what Xbox has done with the Xbox game program. I think that's what they call it or whatever. The one where you play Netflix for games. They've done so many great things there that I'd love to see that shine out more. You know, playing nice with them on terms of cross-platform play. It's a really interesting spot to be in right now.
Yeah, the whole console wars thing is so boring to me. I mean, but people still do it every day, right? You're either an Xbox or a Sony. I don't know what the pejorative there is.
Pony. They call them ponies.
A pony?
Yeah. I've been called the pony a lot, yeah.
You're a pony?
No, I'm not, but I've been called that a lot, yeah. I just prefer to play things on PlayStation. I covered it for 8 years, right? It was my sole beat on the job. So yeah, I know it pretty well. And then more numbers for you. The Persona series has reached a new sales milestone. According to Sega's 2017 annual report, the franchise has now topped 8.5 million units sold, packaged in digital total, across 13 total editions.
I've never played a Persona game.
Really?
So many people I know are like, if you're into, like, there's no casual Persona fans. If you're into Persona, you're into Persona.
You gotta love Persona, yeah.
Would I like Persona?
Do you like turn-based RPGs? Do you like high school drama?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, then you'd like it.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right.
Play the new one.
What's a good ending? Can you just dive in?
I would say, if you want to play on your Vita, play Persona 4 Golden and have it with you at all times. If you want to play on the PS4, well, you don't have any choices.
Persona 5?
Persona 5.
Okay.
Which is awesome.
It's okay to come in.
Yeah. They're like Final Fantasies, you know, where you just jump
different?
In. You might get a reference here or there, understand something a bit more, but you don't need to.
All right. I'll give it a try.
Okay. And then finally, number five. PUBG Game of the Year ? This is an IGN story that I found interesting. Speaking to PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, creative director Brendan PlayerUnknown Green, that's a mouthful, I asked what he thought of early access games like PUBG being considered for Game of the Year awards, and he somewhat surprisingly told me, quote, "Personally, I don't want to win game. I don't want to win a Game of the Year award. While I would love to win it for the team, I think this year there have been far better games. Green specifically called out The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild and Horizon Zero Dawn as, quote, masterpieces of game design and storytelling. They're just wonderful, wonderful games. I think they will probably win it. I would hope they would win it, Green said of the award. Green said the award would be a nice feather in their cap for the PUBG Corp team, but reiterated, I don't know if we deserve it. PUBG Corp CEO C.H. Kim said, quote, we're really not interested in whether they deserve awards or not, and are instead focused on bringing the best gameplay to the Xbox game preview and PC version. Kim followed up by saying early access shouldn't matter when judging games for awards, and that you should just look at the game itself, not the label it has. Kim explained that once the 1.0 version comes out, we're going to continually upgrade the game going forward. We're not going to stop there. They're answering the question we've been debating on this show forever. They've been listening. Should it be considered for Game of the Year? And then do you think it has a shot?
I like Brendan a lot. And I think he's obviously being very gracious here. But I don't think he's saying this just for, you know, just to appear gracious. I think this is honestly his opinion. I think he's right. I think there are I love PUBG. I think it's absolutely one of the great games of this year. I think it's going to be in every Game of the Year conversation.
Yep.
I think it will win a ton of awards, either, you know, format specific, you know, PC Game of the Year, probably is PC Game of the Year is my guess, and genre specific. In terms of overall Game of the Year, I think he's right. As much as I love PUBG, Breath of the Wild, I can't speak to Horizon Zero Dawn because I haven't played it yet. I haven't played it yet. I'm waiting for PS4. When my 4K TV shows up,
okay,
I'm going
fair.
All in.
Fair.
All in on with the enhanced version. But I think that Breath of the Wild and Mario, I can only assume that Brendan hasn't played Mario Odyssey yet, otherwise he'd be talking about that as well. I think between those two, do you think Horizon Zero Dawn is legitimately up there with Zelda and Mario as like top tier contender for Game of the Year?
I think, and this is a conversation we've had on all the Kind of Funny products.
Yeah.
Up until...
Products? Is that what you call them?
I call it content shows.
Content shows,
yeah,
IP.
It's been a race between, is it going to be Zelda or is it going to be Horizon?
So, I mean, again, I haven't played Horizon. I know a lot of people love it.
Yeah.
I know Breath of the Wild. It is an absolute masterpiece. Is Horizon genuinely on that level?
I think so. I think that I've been the one saying I would vote for Horizon for Game of the Year. However, today I will officially confirm I'm pretty sure I'm switching my vote to Mario.
You think Mario is gonna beat out Zelda and everything else?
Well, I mean, this is for what I would vote for for the Kind of Funny Game of the Year. I think right now, and I'm at Bowser's Castle in Mario. I think I like Mario more than I liked Zelda, and I loved Zelda.
So at that point, I think it comes down to largely a matter of taste, don't you think? Because they're both so good.
Yeah.
And again, I can't speak to Horizon, but I do think that if you ask me right now, Zelda, a few months ago, or even a couple of weeks ago, I would have said, and I did on this show, so it's Breath of the Wild. Breath of the Wild. There's nothing else because it's so good. And I knew that Odyssey would, you know, they very rarely fail on these games, like, but maybe it could have been another Sunshine or a game that people liked less.
That's just like,
but it's not. It's absolutely, I think, probably it's top tier, one of the best Mario games of all time, absolutely phenomenal. And now I think between Zelda and Mario, it's a coin flip between the two. It's gonna be very, very hard to pick between.
I was talking to Tim about it the other day. For me, I think the difference here and why I think I want to put Mario in front of Zelda is just the fact that I love them both. Mario is pure joy the entire time.
Yes.
In Zelda, I'm not even saying often, but enough. There'd be times of like, wait, I dropped the stick I wanted to use. I dropped the sword. Do this. I'm like, oh, this is a cumbersome. What am I supposed to? Okay, there it is. And I'm talking about like out of the however many hours I played Zelda, I beat it, you know, begin and all that stuff. A few times this happens. But I mean, Mario literally is I jump in and it's just like, either it's 15 minutes or it's, you know, multiple hours all night long sitting there just playing this game
is,
and so in love with it.
If the metric, and everyone obviously has their own different philosophy, but if you're saying, okay, here's what makes a great game, I want something that is just a pure delight to play every minute, just the constant joy of, oh my God, that happened, or you can do that, and just delight of discovery and exploration, and basically the sense of like you're playing a game with like a constant goofy smile on your face, Super Mario Odyssey is the Game of the Year.
Yeah.
There's nothing that even comes close to it.
But this is where I always come down with Game of the Year is the fact that you put Horizon, Zelda, Mario into the game, PUBG, into the Game of the Year conversation. I think it always comes down to a coin flip, right? Of personal preference. You have to look at all those games and be like, what works for
by
me?
By the end of every year, there are a few games that are all so fantastically good that the only daylight between them is your own personal biases and preferences.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, people end up, you know, when Giant Bomb or whatever get together at the end of the year and have their
giant
big,
argument.
Their big giant argument, it often comes down to personal preference. Because you can't say, oh, well, but Mario's not really that good. Like, no one with any brain or any understanding of video games would say, Mario Odyssey's not that good. Anyone can see that it is phenomenal. Yeah. And so it just comes down to, I don't personally like that. Like, one of the reasons why I love Odyssey is I love that it's that they moved away from... There's different sub-styles of Mario games, right? There's one where, okay, here's a bunch of seconds on the clock, there's a flagpole at the end, go. And there's a sense of, like, constant... And a lot of the games almost have that kind of, like, the screen's always, like, pushing you forward, and there's a sense of, like, pressure and movement. I got to keep moving forward or I'm gonna die. Some people really respond to that kind of Mario game. I mean, it's been that way since the very first Super Mario Brothers. I personally much prefer the style of open-ended exploration, and I don't feel the time pressure, and I can go, oh, what's over here?
Yep.
Oh my God, there's a whole hidden area over here, and I can explore and discover and play the game at my own pace. That's the kind of Mario game that I love, and Odyssey is all that,
yep.
And I just love it.
I was talking, you know, on the Bombcast with Jeff about it yesterday, and it was the fact that there is no wasted space. There's no corner. Like, I'll be playing the game, and I'm like, there's the objective, but there's just a patch of green over there, a new platform that I shouldn't jump to. Why would I? And you jump over there, and even if it's just invisible coins that are there,
yeah,
you're rewarded everything for
is
exploring.
There, everything is there for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
And the same, again, the same is true of Zelda. Are we missing anything? Like, what else would you put? We're talking about...
What's
in that top tier?
So I think it's Zelda, I think it's Horizon, I think it's Mario. I think PUBG needs to be in the conversation.
PUBG is going to be in the conversation.
I know a lot of our audience says Persona 5 needs to be in the conversation.
Okay.
And I'm only 25 hours into Persona 5, so I know I haven't started it, but Nier, people always want Nier to be talked about in this. But this is where we start getting into, I definitely think these games are the ones that you want to give the nod to. You want to be able to say they were a Game of the Year nominee. I don't know personally, and I haven't played Nier, that it can get up to that level, right? Of like, it's competing with Mario, but it's one of these outstanding games of the year that needs a tip of the hat.
I mean, the other thing about it is just the broadness of the appeal. Like, if someone said, I'm getting a Switch tomorrow and I can afford one game to get with it, what would I get? I'd say Mario.
Of course.
And again, Zelda by some standards might be the better game. I would say, like, what kind of games do you like?
Exactly.
Because maybe if they like the style of Zelda more, I'd point them in that direction.
But that's the thing, right? Is that I feel like Mario is a game anybody could pick up, play, and enjoy and have something to it. Where Zelda, I do think there is a, do you like open world? Do you like this? Are you looking for a story in your open world? Kind of. Whereas Mario's just like, hey, run around and get stuff and have fun playing it and take, what's going to happen when you take over this? What goofy costume are you going to get? What's hidden behind that
wall?
Oh my
God, my wife is playing it more than me right now. And every time, whatever the kind of the signature capture is on each world. Like, she got to the world a couple of days ago where you capture the caterpillars that can kind of extend. So like I remember thinking when I first saw that dynamic of the hat can become things, I remember thinking they might have jumped the shark here. This might be one gimmick too many. But it's not. It's brilliant. And it gives each level its unique. Mm-hmm. There's a different approach to gameplay in each level based on what your capture is. And obviously the levels and the puzzles are all structured around, so you can stretch here or over here, you know, you can jump really high, whatever. And each level is built around whatever the specific capture, what are the properties you inherit when you capture this character? Just again, game design masterclass. Just absolutely genius.
Yeah.
And again, there's that sense of like every minute you're playing it, you've got that silly grin on your face because you're just having so much fun.
Exactly. And it's discovering the new little intricacies. Have you done the food world or whatever where you're the chef?
No, we're getting there. We just got done with New Donk City.
Okay.
And we're on whatever the next
one is
after that.
What a great ending.
I thought that New Donk City was, I know a lot of people complained about like kind of the fully kind of anthropomorphic humans and it didn't feel like, somebody said to me one of the complaints against it is there's no consistent aesthetic.
Yeah.
That each world feels very, very, I actually love that. And even though New Donk City is, it is a bit jarring at first. Wait, he's in like the quote unquote kind of real world here.
Yeah,
and these people actually look like real people. But just little things like how the question blocks are on the street lights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just, you know, on the crossing. It's just little things you try to go like, oh my God, like what a nice little touch.
So perfect.
And it's
so
like
great.
Every 5 seconds with that game, there's something you go, oh, look at that. It's so cool. I love it.
It's exactly.
God bless Nintendo.
Love it. Are they going for food? Have them get me food. Yeah. I'm sorry. I got a tight schedule. We've gone long because we're having a great show. I don't want to stop it. Now, here's the thing you need to understand.
Yes.
About you joining a full time now. Every show, I'm going to kick to you out with a little funny thing after this segment.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, where would I go to know what came to the mom and grop shops? And then you have to read all these lines. Just this stuff here.
You want me to read this what's in bold here and then this list of games?
No, just the what's in bold. I'll take it over from there because it'll be a little jingle and stuff.
Is this the job of the permanent co-host to read this line?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want me to read it now?
No, I'm going to set you up. Hold on. I'm getting ready to tee it up. Ready?
All right, I'm learning on the job here.
So, Gary, I'm super excited for PUBG on Xbox One, but it's still a ways out. If I wanted to know what came to the mom and grop digital shops today, where would I go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, Sokoban Next on Vita. Kotaku listed as PlayStation 4, but I did some sleuthing. It's apparently only on Vita.
If a Vita game releases in the forest and there's no one there, get released?
I'll be playing it. Everybody's going to go play the Sokodo. You know what I mean? That's the one it's all about. That's where we're all
That's
about.
That's the only release today?
Apparently.
Slim pickings.
Hey, it's Wednesday.
Yeah, it's a Wednesday.
Tuesday was right there. You got Call of Duty on Friday. There's a million things happening.
Why is that releasing on? Is Friday the new Tuesday? What is that?
I think Friday's the new, hey, we have a
blockbuster.
We got a blockbuster over here. We got this crazy game that's going to go mainstream, we think. Everybody wants it for the weekend.
What's the early word on that?
I haven't heard
Call
any.
Call of Duty World War II.
I haven't heard any.
I guess the embargo's up what?
Soon, this week sometime. Probably tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's
You can tell we didn't get a copy because I don't even know. I don't know what's happening with it. It's coming up soon, though. So there you go. It's got to be out. You'd assume. You were showing me videos today leaked from Europe of loot boxes.
Loot boxes landing on Normandy Beach. What a respectful tribute to the countless brave who died on Normandy Beach. To shower players with the microtransaction loot boxes.
They're cards to play a little bit further. Yeah. Anyways, we got new dates for you. PUBG is officially coming to Xbox One's Early Access program on December 12th. It'll be out of Early Access on PC in late December.
December is a big month for PUBG.
Yeah, exactly. Which really screws people over if they were going to do that thing of like, well, it is an Early Access on PC, so we can't put it in
here. I am so interested and invested in how the Xbox version of PUBG is. Because as much as I love it, I think part of the reason why I crept away from it was I'm just lazy and I'm sitting at home. I talked about this before the show, and like my PC is in my office, which is in a totally different part of the house. And like, I kind of want to play PUBG, but I gotta go all the way downstairs, set up my headphones and turn on the PC, and I'm like isolated from the rest of the house. I just don't want to do it. But if it's on Xbox and I'm watching TV and I just press a button and I'm playing PUBG, frictionless. Maybe that's my way back into Battlefield.
Jack Walkley wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD just like you can and says, how well will PUBG do on Xbox One? He burped in the letter. What do you want me to do? How well will PUBG do on Xbox One? I, like Greg, play on console rather than PC and have been super excited for PUBG on Xbox One. However, Fortnite's Battle Royale mode came out of nowhere and is already doing what I had hoped PUBG would do for me when it launched. Today, he talks about the release date of 12/12. One group... Looking at the replies, it looks as if there are two loud groups of people responding to the news of the 12/12 release date. One group seems to be PC players mocking the release, and the other console players saying they don't need this game, Fortnite is free, and Fortnite beat PUBG already. What do you think is going to happen, guys? I think I'm going to happily buy this on Xbox One and actually be playing my Xbox One pretty consistently. I was telling you, what I have the Xbox One X at home now that from the kind of funny that I'm screwing with. When this inevitably happens, I plan on bringing the Xbox One S to work and put it on my desk.
And you're a pony.
I am a huge pony. I ride Shuhei Yoshida.
If Battlegrounds can get ponies.
Yeah.
So the Xbox. We talked about this. We talked about this many times between the Xbox and the PlayStation. There's so few games that make the difference, like format the idea of like the format exclusive, like, you know, Halo over here, and what does PlayStation have?
Nothing.
Right?
Oh wait, everything. That's right, they have everything. My apologies, all sorts of stuff.
Resistance is that coming back?
No, they're not. No,
Gran Turismo.
Yeah, it's out. No, it's out right now. What? You're being serious? Horizon. You know, the new Sucker
and
Punch
game. And that's a lock solid. That would never be on Xbox.
No, Death Stranding. You're gonna go. You know what I mean? Keep going that way. Spider-Man.
Right. So
Days Gone, Detroit.
Those games that you can lock down and say, hey, if you want to play this game, you can only play it over here. Those games are few and far between. Battlegrounds is clearly one of those games. I think Microsoft made a very smart decision backing up the money truck and saying, come here, we want you. We know you can be a needle mover. There obviously will be Battlegrounds there'll be a Battleground special edition Xbox that'll be painted
if
in some...
If they're smart, they better
look like
do
a frying
that,
pan or some shit.
It comes with a frying
pan. Have a big handle on the end or something, and you can whack people with
sure.
it. Or a frying pan controller. They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
All of those things are going to happen. A lot of it's going to depend on how well did they adapt it. A lot of people have talked about
how
well are the controls going to map to the controller? Will you be able to do the precise aiming and stuff? The early word that I've heard from people is that they've actually done it quite well. I really hope that they've done it well, because I'm very invested in playing it. But I do think it has the potential to, again, once the holidays come around and a lot of people are out there, well, which one where I'm going to go? Oh, I've heard PUBG Battlegrounds. I've heard about that. That's supposed to be the shit, right?
Yeah.
Xbox.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting, yeah, for the people who are the ones who've been on the fence about the Xbox One X or whatever, like people who are like, I have PlayStation 4, I'm set. There's this and then the promise of whatever Xbox is going to do down the line. Maybe
now,
you want to play some Cuphead.
What the Fortnite guys have done is obviously pretty cheeky, right? They saw that Battlegrounds was going viral, essentially.
Yeah.
And they already have a game out there. Can we adapt this very quickly and beat them to market? They did. It seems like people are liking what they did. If I was Brendan, I'd be a little bit irritated that they've done that, because they've copied my game and now they're eating our lunch. So people say, oh, we don't need it, we've got Fortnite.
Yeah,
wait until Battlegrounds comes out and we'll see.
It's going to be a movement, and I think that you'll see a lot of people flocking to it and talking about it and wanting to play, and I think it'll be big. I got bad news for you over on PlayStation 3. DC Universe Online is shutting down on January 31st, 2018. You can still of course play it on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC, but a sad day for one of the places it started on. Owlboy is coming to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Switch on February 13th. And then there's going to be a Nintendo 2DS Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D version that comes out for $80. It's got its own, it's a green Nintendo 2DS with all this other stuff. You're hanging out. There you go.
The 2DS is coming pre-installed with Ocarina of Time 3D.
Yeah, that's
What's wrong? Something feels wrong about that.
Yeah, it's a confusing thing to do.
Did Nintendo give up on 3D? Because I know there are...
Yeah, I guess so.
It never really took on in any iteration,
no,
did it?
No,
I used to, I have a 3DS, but I always turned that slider right down. It never really appealed to me, the 3D part.
Nobody wants that. And then they're also putting out The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild Explorer's Edition, a bundle that includes the critically acclaimed and award-winning Nintendo Switch game, a 100-page Explorer's Guide, and a two-sided map for a suggested retailer price of $60. Deals of the day for you. PlayStation Plus games have been revealed for November. Until Dawn, Rush of Blood is coming to PlayStation VR. This is outside of the realm of the usual PlayStation Plus. It's going to be November 7th through January 2nd, so a long time to pick that up.
What is Rush of Blood? Is that like a different, an Until Dawn type experience, but built just for VR?
It's what it is. It's an on-rail shooting gallery in VR, where you like ride a mine cart and you shoot stuff that pop out and scare you. It's a horror. Yeah, it's really fun. It sounds stupid because Until Dawn wasn't that at all, but actually,
yeah, it feels like a weird spin-off.
It was them applying the license to this. It was made by Supermassive, so it's cool and it's polished and everybody really likes
PlayStation's
it.
PlayStation's decided that Until Dawn is like our horror franchise, so
exactly.
It makes sense to slap the label on it. Okay.
100%. Then, what happened? What do I want to eat? Spicy tuna. Just put, you know what I like. I can't stop the show for lunch. Worms Battlegrounds is coming to PlayStation 4. Bound is coming to PlayStation 4. R-Type Dimensions is on PS3. Ragdoll Kung Fu Fists of Plastic is on PS3. And if you didn't play that, don't. I remember playing that back in the day. No.
PS3 is still seeing new releases, still slugging away.
No. This is just PS Plus. This is just them giving away free
stuff
games
that's
for
just, okay,
but I guess games do
free.
Come to PS3. Dungeon Punks comes to PlayStation 4. Vita. This is cross-buy of PS4. And then Broken Sword 5, The Serpent's Curse, Episodes 1 and 2. Are available on PlayStation Vita as well for the month of November. All around kind of weak month, but got to put it out there. Also, right now, there's also the PlayStation Plus double discounts. A whole bunch of games like the Mega Man Legacy Collection 2, Kingdom Hearts, Horizon Zero Dawn are all seeing double discounts for PlayStation Plus subscribers. That ends November 7th.
So here's my chance to get into
right
Horizon
there.
Zero Dawn.
Are you a PlayStation Plus member?
Yes.
44% off. And you'd be right there. You'd be all set for next week's DLC. Frozen Wilds comes out next week.
Yes. And the PS4, the Pro optimizations, that just comes in the form of a free update, right?
Yeah,
when they upgrade them for Pro?
Yeah, I think you go into the settings, some games you have to go into the settings and opt in and say enable Pro, whatever the
right,
hell it
okay.
is. But yeah, once you're there, it's already
good
there.
To know. Yeah, the 4K era begins for me tomorrow, so I'm very excited about what's out there.
Yeah. It's going to be a whole new world for you. How big is this 4K TV?
65.
Hoo-wee.
Yeah, it's a biggie.
Yeah, that's what you want.
Very excited about
it. Now, you don't have to give me the price. Did it set you? Are these things still ridiculously expensive? Or are they coming down?
Yeah, I was like, But I had my current TV for like 7 or 8 years.
All right,
It's getting a bit clunky. And I feel like the tipping, I mean, we're now, I feel like just at the beginning of the viability of with the One X and PS4 Pro, and you go to the store now and all the big releases are, all the big movie releases are in 4K. I feel like that tipping point, there's not still not a ton of content.
You're tip of the sword, but, though. There's content there for you.
Yeah.
All right. Time to squad up. This is where one of you writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD. You give me your name, your username, your platform of choice, and what game you need help in. I read it here. The best friends find you, and everybody plays games together. Today, Drew wrote in. He needs help on PlayStation 4. His PSN handle is the_prince09. I think I might have played Friday the 13th with him last night, but I'm not sure. What's up, everybody? Doesn't it suck when you and your friends start getting older, so finding time to game together is difficult? Between work, significant others, getting different consoles, drifting away from games, breaking up while deployed, so your girlfriend keeps your consoles, damn, that one sucks, and more. A lot of stuff can get in the way. I've been into single-player games more recently, but want to get back into multiplayer. I picked up Friday the 13th, Elder Scrolls Online, WWE 2K18, and soon we'll have Battlefront 2. I also have Injustice 2, Tekken, Overwatch, and Uncharted 4. If any of those sound fun, hit me up on PSN. Hell, we can even just add each other and never actually play. It's all good. Thanks, Kinda Funny, and the Kinda Funny best friends. Hashtag, let Cool Greg host. Everybody on PS4, hit up the_prince09. Become his friend, play those games, have some fun.
I might have to hit you on a squad. Like, I don't know what the next one would be. Like, there's a period I was desperately looking for people to play Destiny 2 with.
And you couldn't do it?
I could have cut, but now I've got a regular slot. I can come on the show and say, I need to squad up.
There you go. We can squad you up next Widow Wednesday. It's all easy. Right. We're now going to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. This is where you, the people watching the show live on Twitch, write in to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and tell us what we screwed up as we screw it up so that we can set the record straight.
How'd you do? I say how did, because I know I did great. I'm asking how did you do?
He's mad at you.
Who is?
Neo Aoshi writes in and says, "Hey guys, welcome aboard, Gary. Just so you know, Mario Odyssey is two player. Share the joy with a friend that you play as Cappy.
The other person can play the hat, but it's still local single player.
Just putting it out there, just saying that, you know, it wasn't perfect for you.
Thumbs down on
apparently,
that one.
Tim yesterday asked for homework on Pokemon stuff. Like how many Pokemons there's been. And now there's a huge fight in there with Capitalist Pig and a bunch of other people trying to debate how many there actually have been. So I'm not going to get involved with that one. I don't want to get into it. I just said I'm not going to get into it, Kevin. Capitalist Pig did write in and say Christine Lakin's character was Jane in The Walking Dead season 2. No, thank you very much for that. Capitalist Pig comes back and says, wait. Yeah, no, that's what I said. That I don't accept that correction. Because he's saying that the PlayStation 4 is shipped 67.5 million. I'm saying, yes, that's what I said.
Yeah, that is what you said.
Thank you.
Okay. You made that clear.
And then I wanted to know how many had gone beforehand. Houses. That's all. No, because I said they had, remember, that's not sold through. I said the exact opposite of that.
I mean, anytime you go to Best Buy or whatever, and you see a big pile of PlayStations, those are PlayStations that have been shipped, but no one's bought them yet.
Talk in your microphone, or I guess you can hear yourself. But if you're gonna give me a real correction, I need you to talk in the microphone.
I thought you had said afterwards that they had sold 65 as well, which I thought was weird. But I
thought I said that last time we got
was 65 million.
And you're okay.
The last time.
Okay. Yeah. So you're saying so what Capitalist Pig is saying that he's saying that last time we had a check in on this, but he's saying September 30th that shipped whatever. Fuck it, video games are dumb.
Yep. Nailed it.
KevKev 330 says, "Hey Greg, just a quick update on Xbox One sales from a Business Insider article. Quote, though Microsoft stopped reporting sales numbers of its Xbox One console of its Xbox One console, numbers provided by Super Data Research indicate Microsoft has sold approximately 26 million Xbox One consoles as of January 2017.
So do you think that it could be like, in terms of installed, it could be like 2-to-1 PlayStation Xbox?
Seems like it, right? That's what they're talking about, yeah.
That's a lot, isn't it?
That's a lot, too. And then here's where it gets... The Waterman's throwing... A nice name, by the way. The Waterman's throwing out VG charts, which kind of just makes everything up. But they're saying the PS4 has sold 63.12 million units worldwide. Xbox One has sold 30.97 million worldwide. There's no way. Yeah, there are another one from... I'll be that one. But that's it. That's not that bad. Just more clarifications.
Pretty good.
Yeah, we'll do it. You screwed up the worst, you know what I mean?
How did I screw up? With what, the hat thing? Come on.
Yeah, you know, it's a full-blown thing.
He got you good.
Yeah, he got you. They nailed you. Don't trust VG charts.
I reject that one.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, November 1st, 2017. Thank you for caring, watching, enjoying, welcoming new kind of funny Games Daily Show host, Gary Whitta. I'll come up with a better name for you. You don't want to be Rogue One anymore. I'll come up with something.
I mean, I'm just calling me. Well, now I'm kind of funnies.
Gary Whitta. It's going to be fun when that's the one thing we screwed up. If we would have gotten this news out first, that could have been put in the Telltale release.
That's right.
Writer of Rogue One.
And co-host
kind of funny Chucklehead. Games
Daily, yeah.
Tomorrow's co-host will be Andrea Renee, making a return to the show. I feel like I haven't worked with her in a while. If you didn't know, each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about before jumping in to your questions, comments, and concerns, giving you perspective, answering your questions, bad PSN names, talking to Gary, and having a good time. If you like that, you can watch live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. You can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, or you can listen on podcast services around the globe, no matter where you get the show. Thank you so much for supporting us. Remember, Extra Life, this Saturday, 24 hours of crazy stuff, games, shenanigans, maybe blue hair, all benefiting the Children's Miracle Network. So please, go over there, subscribe, have fun. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.